Good morning. You're listening to WHCL 88.7 FM. My guest this morning is Dr. Jai Issa. Dr. Issa, you were Assistant Professor of History and African Studies at Delaware State University until recently. Can you tell us what happened on August 17th, 2012?
Yes. On August 17th, I was fired from Delaware State University. The firing had mostly to do with several issues. First, I believe that I was fired because I wrote an article that criticized the White House strategy on historically black colleges and universities. Also, I was teaching young people to think at a college setting where you would think at a university that should be championed, but at Delaware State, that was an issue, especially young African-American students, to think and to believe in democracy and act on democracy and to look at the Constitution and to take it seriously. And also, I was investigating a racist white supremacist flyer that was put in the black community, which depicted a black man from hanging from a tree. And I think all three of these issues had a lot to do with my firing. Although on March the 1st, I was arrested without probable cause, according to the arresting officers who testified in a hearing in December that they had no probable cause to arrest me. But yet I was arrested and threatened by police officers while in jail to sign documents. And later I'm fired, and that's partially the August 17th letter is about.
Could you tell me what happened to your former barber?
Well, it was a young man by the name of Johnny Lorenzo Clark, who worked, well, he was an itinerant barber, and he worked in a barber shop where I went to get my hair cut, and he cut my hair a few times. He wasn't my permanent barber, but he was there, and I did, you know, like most barber shops, particularly in the African American community, you become extremely personal with people who cut your hair. And so on May the 11th, he was found hanging from a tree in a city park in Dover, Delaware, Silver Lake Park. And I was at that park. I visited that park frequently. And it's difficult talking about this, you know, keep reliving it. And he was allegedly he hung himself with his belt, but many in the community, including myself, believe that there was foul play and that he may have been murdered or lynched, especially given the fact that someone had put out a flyer months prior saying that they would lynch one nigger at a time, or what they called cleaning the streets one nigger at a time. And so that's what happened to my former barber. He was found hanging on a tree in the park during broad daylight. Very few people in the community believe that this is something that he did to himself. We believe that someone did this to him, and we believe we have proof that who these individuals are. And because they attempted to do it to another person, but this person got away.
I'm very sorry to hear about your barber. if I could go back to March, the March 1st student rally, what was the purpose of the rally?
The students were on February the 29th, the students had a rally on the racist flyer that was distributed throughout the black community. I received the flyer in early February, and I began lecturing on the history of lynchings in the United States. And I used the flyer as a primary source. Young people being young and courageous and being inquisitive as they are, they asked if they can get a copy of the flyer, and they took a photograph with their camera, and they decided that they were going to have a rally on campus to bring notice to the fact that someone put this flyer out and it should be taken seriously. But the university police stopped the students in the midst of their rally on February the 29th. And the students were very disappointed that they were stopped because they were just talking and gathering and handing out information to other students. And they called me and asked me what did I think. And we called the ACLU, and the ACLU told them that they didn't believe that the university had the right to do it, and the students had made a decision that they were going to go to a board of trustee meeting, which was happening the very next day, and bring attention to, one, the fact that there were very few African-American professors at a historically black college. Two, they were going to deal with the corruption because the president of the university was cited by the state audit of regarding money missing from the university coffers. And three, they were going to deal with the issue of the flyer. I believe they were going to deal with the issue of the flyer. And as a faculty, I supported the students, and I encouraged the students like I encourage other rallies in other years, that students should exercise their constitutional right, particularly that of the First Amendment, and challenge democracy. This is what democracy is about. Citizens have a right to petition government. That's the First Amendment, coming from the Bill of Rights. And so I did encourage them. I was out there that day on March the 1st, but I was out there as an observer, and I was entrapped and arrested.
Now, the Board of Trustees meeting, is that open to the public?
Yes, it's open to the public. Delaware State University is a state university, so all public meetings are, all Board of Trustee meetings are open to the public, but for some strange reason, the university did not want a group of African-American students attending that meeting addressing these issues. Why, I don't know, because 2 years prior, a group of white students had a similar rally where they brought their horses, and faculty supported them and administrators supported them. They brought their horses to the university campus, and they their horses even defecated all over the campus, and they had a rally. This was the Equestrian team, which is a majority white team, and no one was arrested. The media was there. But no one was arrested. I know because I was there. I watched it. Many of the students were my students, and I encouraged them to do it. They came to me previously, and they asked me, Dr. Issa, what do you think? Do you think we should do it? I said, sure. If you feel that there are things that are concerning you, this is your university. The name of the university will be with you forever once you graduate. So Yes, you have a right to address government, particularly at the university, on your issues. The administration had a serious problem with a group of young African Americans at a predominantly African American university doing this, and so they entrapped me, set me up, and had me arrested. And so I was a pretty vocal professor, as you can probably tell, constantly telling students their rights, as members of the society, as citizens, to be productive and to challenge government. That democracy means for the people, majority rule, which is the people, and that they have to be active and engaging citizens, and that's their moral responsibility to society. And so the university didn't really like my faculty activism, and also I was vocal, and I had written an article called How Black Colleges Are Turning White, The Ethnic Cleansing of HBCUs in the Age of Obama. And it was an investigative piece regarding what I saw as an encroachment on America's 105 historically black colleges and universities.
I'd like to post a link to that article with this interview, if you don't mind.
Yeah, sure.
Now, before the incident between yourself and the police, were any of the other students, was there any other interactions with the police and the students?
No. The police had come up previously, not the police, but a university worker came up previously and stated to the students that they didn't have a right to gather in front of the Martin Luther King Center to walk over to the Board of Trustee meetings. But the students on the video and myself, I stated that they did have a First Amendment right to walk, and to go and petition government. And that was the only encounter that we had with, but the police, they were there, but they didn't say anything. You know, next thing I knew was that I was grabbed and attacked from behind by several officers. Well, before that, a university employee grabbed me several times. He wasn't an officer, but he did grab me, and and after that, then the university police grabbed me and brutalized me, and that's what caused me to go to the hospital.
And when you got to the hospital, what did they? What kind of damages did they diagnose you with?
Well, a few weeks later, I did an MRI, and we found that I had ligaments, a partial separation in my shoulder, had knee damage, and my blood pressure was way over 200. And in the hospital, on my emergency bed, I was again arrested by the university police, and on my emergency bed, and taken off and handed over. Seems like I was arrested about four times that day. That seems like I was. And then they put me in jail, and that's when they threatened me to sign documents saying that they basically forced me to sign documents saying that I would never, if I was caught on the university again, that I'll be arrested for trespassing.
Wow. So, seems like that was the firing of you at that time.
Yes. And I was shocked. You know, I was really, really, really shocked that they would go to this extent. I was also shocked at the fact that very few of the faculty supported me including my union, the AAUP, very little support. The Attorney General for Delaware is Mr. Bo Biden, who is the son of the Vice President, Joe Biden. He is, his name is on my prosecuting papers, and he's the Attorney General. And although my witnesses and video evidence shows that I did not assault an officer, and that testimony, according to the officers that did attack me, that they offensively touched me before I allegedly touched them, and they also had no probable cause to arrest me. But yet, Mr. Biden refuses to drop the charges. And we believe that the whole case is politically motivated.
It certainly sounds like it. And you, prior to this incident, you had had positive reviews from the college. Is that right?
Oh yeah. All of my recommendations from my peers and from the university council were positive. But because of my activism, the administration didn't like me, but, you know, on the college campus, we have academic freedom. And so you're allowed to engage and be active in the community as a part of your community service. But because Delaware State University is the only state university, four-year university in the state, Delaware has less than 1 million citizens, residents in the state, and there's only one university, and that's a historically black university. But over the last 20 years or so, the state put tremendous amount of money in trying to recruit what I believe a more white population to the school at the detriment of African Americans. And so I started writing on this, and I started teaching on this. We talked about my students. I will lecture on Fisher versus the University of Texas, where the Supreme Court is now deliberating on ending affirmative action in higher education. And we would talk about the impact if the Supreme Court did come and rule against affirmative action, what impact would this have on America's institutions of higher learning, and particularly African Americans. And in my professional opinion, it will have a devastating impact on African Americans, because most of the predominantly white universities around the country, whether public or private, most of the black enrollment or minority enrollment is enforced by the federal government's legislation and government rules regarding affirmative action. So if you have, for instance, a university, Penn State, which is a public university, if you have 8 or 9% African Americans, the university has to have quotas for a diverse group of people. But without affirmative action, many African Americans will not be admitted into these predominantly white universities. And at the same time, the federal government is forcing historically black universities to turn white. So what we're looking at is, in a 30 to 40 year period, we may be witnessing the end of African Americans in higher education. And we must also remember that the historically black colleges is what contributed to the black middle class. And so without these schools, we wouldn't have a black middle class. We wouldn't have a Dr. Martin Luther King. We wouldn't have a W.E.B. Du Bois and a Jesse Jackson and many of these other people, Rosa Parks. They all attended and worked at historically black colleges. And so what I was writing on and teaching on was the survival of a group of people who've done so much to American democracy. And but obviously, some people, I believe, at the highest realms of federal and state government, didn't like them.
Now, with the court case so far, has that gone anywhere? Have you had any type of initial hearing or?
Yeah, we've had one hearing, as I stated earlier. That one hearing was held and on December the 4th. And at this hearing, the state brought us star witnesses, and they testified, and that is the two individuals who arrested me, and they admitted on trial that they had no probable cause to arrest me. And you would think that the state would have dropped the charges, but instead, the judge, Judge Charles Welch, of the Kent County Court of Common Pleas, just abruptly ended the trial, the hearing, without allowing us, me, the defendant, to bring any of my witnesses. And he told us that he would get back with us within 1 or 2 weeks.
I never heard of that.
But it's been over a month. We've heard nothing from the judge.
Have you ever heard of a judge stopping the trial before the witness is able to bring in their...
We begged the judge, my attorney begged him to please let us at least finish tomorrow. Let us bring in our witnesses. He refused to do so. And this is all on trial record.
Now, in one of your students traveled to testify on your behalf at that hearing?
Yes, one of my students who was a witness and who did one of the videos of me, who recorded one of the videos of me being arrested. 2 weeks later, after the hearing, although he was not allowed to testify, none of my witnesses have been able to testify at the hearing. And though he was not allowed to testify, 2 weeks later in New York City, he was beat up by the NYPD police, and he was brutalized. I think you may have footage of that, and I'm not sure if there is a connection between my case, but I think it's pretty ironic.
If it's not related to your case, then it just is a statement of how bad the times are.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. In Delaware, specifically, Delaware has one of the largest incarcerations of African-American men in the country. In fact, 67% of all people incarcerated in Delaware are African-Americans, although they represent less than 25% of the state's population.
That's pretty appalling.
Yeah, it's pretty appalling. The mass incarceration of African-American men has... it's really genocide, and it's really it's really a shame. But many of the states are making a lot of money off of African Americans who are arrested on nonviolent crimes.
One other question: during your before the hearing, did your attorney file a motion for discovery? And if so, what evidence did the prosecution have against you?
Yes, my attorney did file a motion for discovery. They gave him nothing. Now, this is the state of Delaware, in which the Attorney General is the Vice President's son, Mr. Beau Biden. And during the course of our hearing a few weeks ago, several weeks ago, the state introduced documents that were not given to us a part of as demanded during discovery, and it was pretty much a kangaroo court.
So I mean, I'm not terribly familiar with how the law works, but is that legal to deny evidence in discovery and introduce it later?
No, it's not legal, and of course we can bring this up during appeal if necessary.
So, for people listening, what can they do to help you out, help your cause, bring attention to other people about what's happening?
Well, it's a sad day in America where university professors are arrested and brutalized by the administration and on a college campus in front of students. And so what we've done is set up a legal defense fund, and if people are interested in donating to my defense fund, because we believe that ultimately the state of Delaware is, their intention is to put me in jail. I'm facing more than 2 years in prison for misdemeanors that I did not do, and misdemeanors where the police omitted in court that they had no probable cause to even arrest me. In most normal circumstances, a judge would have just dismissed it right then and there. But so if those who want to help, it's been financially exhausting. I have a wife and 5 children, all under the ages of 14, and I'm unemployed now.
Mm.
So a significant part of our household income has been diminished based on a false arrest, basically. So they can go to HBCUinstitute.org. That's HBCUinstitute.org. Also, we are now in the process of calling for a major march on the White House to deal with an array of issues that affect citizens of this country, particularly that of police brutality, which we're calling for an organized rally at the White House on the eve of Trayvon Martin's assassination. And so we're also calling attention to the issue of affirmative action. We're asking that the White House and the Supreme Court not end this. A very important legislation that was brought about due to the Civil Rights Movement. Also, on the 15th of January, on Dr. King's birthday, we're going to have a march in downtown Dover, Delaware, and we're putting together a petition to give to the president and the vice president and the vice president's son regarding our demands as people, that what we want to see as citizens of this country. And so if people are interested, they can go to March on Dover blogspot.com, and they can comment, and we're uploading the blogspot right now, and we're getting prepared for that. And if anybody's interested in having me up to lecture, I'll be more than happy to talk about the future of higher education and diversity in higher education. These are very important issues. But it seems as though there are a lot of agents out there that are intended in making sure that these universities, particularly that of historically black colleges and universities, do not produce more Dr. Kings and more Du Boises and more Langston Hughes and other people who have been important in shaping and challenging American democracy.
Hmm. And what was it that Dr. King was saying about black leadership in some of the some of his less popular works, or less known?
I'm reading now his book, Testament of Hope. And in that book, he's challenging, this is written in the mid-60s. This is after the 1963 March on Washington. He's challenging black leadership. And he was saying specifically that most of the black leadership were handpicked by the white majority elite. And because of that, They were not able to do the bidding of the majority of people that they claimed to represent. And here we are in 2013, faced with this a similar issue, that today many of those leaders who say that they represent African Americans are actually represent the majority elite. And therefore, we have one of the highest African-American, the African-American unemployment is higher now than it was of the Great Depression. We have one of the largest incarceration rates of African-Americans. I don't think we've had this many African-Americans incarcerated if you compare this to the days of enslavement. The numbers are equal. And so we have a lot of issues as citizens of this country to make this place a better place for all people. And finally, Dr. King said, either we learn to live together as human beings or we'll perish together as fools. Mm. And this is where I think that young people, particularly at Hamilton College, should be engaged in trying to make this society a better society for all citizens. And this is why I commended and worked with the Occupy movement in New York and the Occupy movement in Delaware, because if young people do not get out and challenge democracy, and if they're upset with the things that are going on, they have a constitutional right to challenge it. But what we're seeing ultimately is the triumph of corporations over the rights of citizens. And if we're going to be successful going into moving into the 21st century, this is going to have to be changed, and the change is going to have to come from young people.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Issa, for taking the time to speak with me this morning.
Thank you.